Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he never heated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Welcome along. It's another edition of the Football Family here on the 42 with me, Gavin Cooney. Shane Keegan is here. Hey, Shane.
How are you keeping, Gav?
Not bad. David Snaid is here as well. Hey, David.
How are you? I'm feeling fresh, feeling good, feeling as if I had a good night's sleep and I'm ready to go. How are you feeling, Gav?
Not any of those things. we landed in Woodge yesterday afternoon, and without a whole pile of work to do yesterday, explored a bit of the town last night. No, but I'm not too bad. I'm slightly unnerved, but we woke up to, well, I say we, I woke up to a text message from some local weather service warning of impending thunderstorms and to take shelter. So it's just like, you wake up hungover and then the local authorities are saying, take shelter. it's not ideal. The other bit of background colour from Woodge is the fact that the Ukraine team are staying in our hotel, which... it's definitely more of a comment on the tightening of the purse strings of the Ukraine FA, I can assure you, listener, than it is a comment on my employers. But yeah, so we landed and there was a gaggle of autograph hunters in the lobby. And then wasn't for us, sadly. It was for the Ukraine players milling around outside. We'll look ahead to Republic of Ireland against Ukraine in a couple of later on the show, should I say. But first of all, Ireland 3, Scotland 0. It's a first ever win in the Nations League. It's a first competitive home win in 3 years and a day. A first competitive win at home to a side ranked above Ireland since beating Bosnia in the playoffs for Euro 2016 back in November 2015. David, fair to say that none of us saw this coming. So where did this result come from?
Taking our chances. Well, not even creating chances, taking a chance and then getting a fair bit of luck by Scotland not taking their chances. That's probably the simplest way of doing it in terms of early on in the game, because I didn't think Ireland actually started all that great. And then they kind of looked a bit nervy, but then getting that first goal and then building on it and then just basically took control of the game. That's how it looked from my vantage point anyway.
Shane, the personnel change. Well, let's start with the personnel changes. In came Obafemi, Parrott, Brown, McLean, Malumbi. All made a huge difference.
They certainly did, yeah. I mean, I was trying to put what Obafemi did into context for my wife when I was talking to her, and I was saying, like, literally, it's his first ever start, and in his first ever start, he has scored the best goal I have ever seen in an Ireland jersey. And he has given the best assist I have ever seen in an Ireland jersey, which is pretty remarkable going for a fella making his debut, and sets very high expectations for what we want to see from him going forward. But he in particular was, obviously, he was absolute standout. So he was, again, I had the pleasure of heading up with my young lad. I actually brought my young lad and his two pals from his class. So it was myself and three 7-year-olds. And in the mind of a 7-year-old and the way their mind works, they surely this guy is going to win the Ballon d'Or now. Like, how can he not win the Ballon d'Or? He clearly seems to be better than Messi, Ronaldo, Mbappe, Haaland, every one of them. So it was fantastic. David is kind of hit the nail on the head there. We'll get into the numbers a bit more as we're going along, but we showed a quality in the final third that we've rarely ever showed before, and that was the biggest difference. We didn't absolutely dominate this game. We didn't dominate a game in the manner that you would say, oh yeah, they completely dominated, they should have won 3-0. No, we just had a couple of absolute sublime moments that thankfully resulted in a super result.
They had less possession, didn't they? Remember reading Fennell's piece on the after the game, they had less possession than Scotland, and it's just one of them where, as I was saying earlier, it felt as if Ireland still controlled the game, just even though he had less of the ball.
Which was the better goal? Second or the third goal? Assuming the first goal is not in contention.
Well, I think the Obafemi pass was better than the Obafemi strike. Yeah. I think it was unbelievable to get his head up, one, create a bit of space, get his head up, spot the pass, took tremendous vision, and then to be able to execute it from there. I thought it was absolutely sublime piece of skill, and completely hold my hand up, 100% not something that I expected him to have in his armor, to be honest with you. I suppose likewise the shot from distance. I think he admitted himself, did he say after the game, it's the first time he's ever scored from outside the box in his career.
Correct.
So the two things that he did incredibly, incredibly well are both elements that I just never knew he had. I'm sure he seems a confident guy. I'm sure he knew he had him. He just maybe hasn't shown them at any level before, never mind on an international stage.
What about you, David? Which of the goals are your favourite?
The strike, just for pure fucking hell, what happened there? Because that was my reaction. I was like, fucking hell. Like, it's just, obviously there was a bit more delicacy to the second goal and all round play in terms of obviously Parrott winning the header. If you're looking at it from the point of view of, well, what bodes greater for the future, it's obviously the second goal, because there's a bit of link up between the two. There's a bit of an understanding and there's two fellas involved. But like Parrott's kind of strength to win the first ball, and then also, I think a reference to afterwards, just like getting back up off his arse pretty much straight away and wanting to get in the box and like having that little bit of determination in him bowed as well. And then just the little Cruyff turn away from McGregor and then a little step over to even give himself a bit of an angle. And the manner of the pass, the fact that he's pretty much like standing over the ball. The way he does it, like it was just a sensational goal. Like it really was. And like Obafemi spoke after about feeling as if he already had a bit of a link up, or had a bit of a kind of an understanding with Troy Parrott, because it was, even though they've been around the 21s, they hadn't actually played together. So like that ball as well, and that just, like we're talking about what, like in the previous podcast chats around Ireland, it's being, well, how do you do something different? How do you kind of maybe provide that spark in the final tour? But if you have two lads who are capable of doing it individually, but then also combining, it just gives an added element where they're not always going to be, I'd imagine, available and there. But if you've got an extra string to your bow, and you know we can already play a different way by having these two fellas as a focal point and can actually work off each other, it does bode well. Because especially in international football, when you haven't got maybe loads of time to be working on stuff, if lads have a natural connection and can work off each other and do that and click, because sometimes it just happens in football, doesn't it? Lads can just click. It could be ideal.
Interesting question from Graham in the members WhatsApp group. Details of how to join that, listener, in the episode description of the podcast. I'll throw this to you, Shane. Is the second goal a better goal than the third goal from the team's development point of view? Going long from a goal kick after being caught playing short from one when McGinn put it wide, and he says, I assume a filthy deep completion with Obafemi's beautiful pass.
nicely played, Graham. Nicely played. That's what I thought it was. I think it's Parrott himself goes up for the initial header, is it? And as David says, picks himself up fairly quickly on the back of it. We'll come back to the fact that we did go long off that goal kick, because there's absolutely no doubt our attempts to play out was one of the areas that we did struggle in, and we can't just look at all sweetness and light from this performance. We do need to look at what we can do better, and that's certainly top of that list for me. But yeah, just like how Obafemi, he looked like an out and out 10, whereas, you know, obviously we haven't kind of pinpointed as something very, very different. He spotted a brilliantly, fair play to Parrott. Yeah, fair play to him for the run off it. It's we could argue it all day. I'm going with two. Snade's going with three. But yes, David, or yes, Graham, definitely a filthy deep completion, that pass. It takes every box there based on the data here on Y Scout.
Listener, if you did miss the introduction to deep completions last week, it's not what it sounds like. It is actually just a metric for
a pass. I have it here, Gav. A pass.
Okay, go. Give us
here we go. One more time. A pass excluding crosses that was received in a 20-meter radius from the opponent goal line. So there is absolutely no doubt that that ticks that box. It takes a lot of boxes. That would take that box. It would take an assist. It takes pass into the box. It takes an awful lot of metrics that jump out on the positive side of things.
The only thing I'd say is, why were Ireland so bad at even just having that early build-up play from the back? Because it was something that they had seemed to have ironed out the game a little bit, where they kind of realised at certain times, because it wasn't always... I was looking at it. Every goal kick, it was Kelleher, obviously, in goal, and then Duffy to the right, Egan to the left, pretty much by the six-yard box. But even in the build-up to the second one, Duffy is, like, screaming at Collins, and he's, like, directing him to get further out. I don't understand why this far in, they're still not lads knowing exactly where they have to be when they see, because Scotland, but at the end, we're having three fellas at the edge of the box as well. So, like, surely... That's the thing that still needs to be kind of why was it so dodgy at the start of that game?
Yeah, so I looked at this an awful lot, because in contrast with that, David, Scotland's attempts to play out from the back were excellent. To be fair to them, they actually played right out through our press on a good few occasions, consistently in the first half, maybe not quite as much in the second half. And you're looking and going, right, well, what's going on here? And I suppose I think the only assumption almost that I can make is, so they are, obviously when you're training, you know exactly where you want your players to stand, and everybody should know exactly what you want them to do. The only thing that you can't be 100% sure of is where are the opposition players going to stand. And I would think that maybe they were they possibly a little bit surprised by the way Scotland set up, and maybe that Scotland came and did something in terms of how Scotland pressed them that they weren't fully prepared for, because we so easily could have conceded two goals there, so easily. And again, the amazing thing when you look at the numbers, Shane Duffy had the highest pass completion rate on the field for Ireland. He completed 55 of his 57 passes. Now we all know the two that he didn't complete, don't we? We all know the two that he didn't complete, that's for sure. Because they both should have resulted in goals, which is amazing. That a guy can only get two passes wrong all day and effectively they could have both ended up in the back of the net. But the big difference was we were playing it out to Duffy, and then you had, say, Cullen coming from his position, various different players coming towards Duffy, and Duffy was trying to play the ball to them, whereas the Scotland boys, what was it, Hanley and Hendry, I think, was around the right-hand side of their defence, Hanley in the middle and Hendry on the right. They were playing the ball to the two of them. Then McTominay and even McGinn from higher up were coming towards them, bringing Ireland players towards them. But they weren't choosing to play it into them. They were choosing to use them as decoy runners to clip it over the top of those two players, basically straight into Che Adams, and then try and get him to control it and set it back and play from there. So again, we've had the conversation here kind of right throughout these games that, look, they're probably only going to get one meaningful training session in. So what's your key thing to work on? And to me, it absolutely has to be it 100%. Our attempts to play out in the back, it has to be better.
So it's often like playing out from the back is often viewed as basically a black or white issue. You either play out from the back or you don't. What it sounds like you're saying there is that they're just doing it wrong. There's ways of playing out from the back, and it's not the fact that they're doing it is the problem. It's just the way that they're going about it.
Yeah, like you can play the first pass short, and is that technically now are we playing out from the back? But really the important thing is, well, what happens with the second pass? It's the second pass that dictates things. Again, not to drive David too mad, but it's a similar one to the whole stat that was floating around in hurling. Like it is a short puck out, one that's played to a cornerback, even if the cornerback then pucks it the length of the field. You know, it's the second pass. It's the second pass is more important. That dictates what you're actually trying to do with the ball. And to be fair to Scotland, they were playing the first one short, but they were immediately playing the second one long. But they were doing it very strategically. It wasn't just a hump forward. The runs of McGinn and McTominay in particular were creating that pocket of space in front of Che Adams every time. I mean, what can Shane Duffy do? He can't gamble and position himself in front of Che Adams, because then it's potentially played over the top of him. So he has to stay goal side of him. So if it's clipped in to Che Adams' thigh or chest, he's going to be able to bring it down all day, and he's going to be able to set it back. And that's what they were doing. They were doing it really, really well. Whereas, as I say, ours seem to be want to be short, followed by a second short. There needs to be a bit more variety, and that's no problem continuing to play the first one short. But I think the second one, we have to show more variety in terms of is it a clip up to a tri-parrot or whoever your kind of more physical one of your front two is, or is it even longer again? You know, do you try and bring a lot of players short to suck all the opposition players up and then immediately try and play down the channels for an Obafemi or an Ogbeni or whoever it is that gives you the speed in behind, you know?
Hmm. David, I want to congratulate you. You suggested that Jason Malumbi would solve Ireland's issues by introducing him in midfield, and you were totally right.
I know. Who would have thought it?
he was good though. I mean, if Ireland, you know, Ireland needs lots of energy, and he definitely brought it. I mean, winning the ball back for the third goal being the obvious example.
Yeah, like, I think it was just one of them. It was much as saying he was going to come in, it was more so because it was clear there was going to be loads of changes. I made this point already. I just thought he would have had a bit more of an impact in the games previously because he's been playing regular football. Even though there was a bit of a break after the season. But like compared to say other players, he's pretty much match fit, essentially. You know what I mean? He would have kept himself taken over. I thought he would have, like, the qualities he has, I thought would have been ideal in that Ukraine game. In the second game, having had a game away from home, roast and hot, long travel there, long travel back, it just thought it would have made sense in that second game to freshen things up. But obviously, he had to do it in the tour game, Stephen Kenny. But yeah, because he's been in good form as well. This is just, it ticked a lot of boxes in terms of the form he's been in for his club, the kind of stage he's at. I know it sounds stupid, but he's just had a new contract, so he's probably going to be a bit more settled in himself in terms of he's now knows where he's going to be playing. Like, he is a popular fella around the squad. And like what I was saying earlier, like, in that kind of game, he just had that little bit of an edge to him that had been lacking in that midfield. And you do need that just to balance it up against all the other stuff. But I think, he helped set a bit of a tone, especially more so for that tour goal, obviously, and then little moments of breaking the play up and just reading. I thought just reading the game as much as that was quite good. But I just think genuinely it was... It's a strange one because you are buzzing with the manner of the goals and the excitement that comes with it, but then it is tempered by the fact that there was still a fair bit wrong with that performance early on that a better team would have punished Ireland for, and then you are having a completely different conversation. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, like, we're talking about those chances, but they were big, big chances and big moments in the game for Scotland that came through Ireland's mistakes in stuff that had been happening previously and should have been learned from. Like, it's not even a case of you stop, it's like what Shane said, it's not as if you stop playing out. You just, like, you have to have something else in planned where you say, right, how we want to do it isn't working this way, so now we'll switch it and do it a different way. Like what Shane was saying about those with the run, say a McGinn or a McTominay creating that space. Because even one of the other little things that, again, it's one of them, maybe you pick it up when you're watching the game and you might think that, well, that was a bit of a pattern and it might not actually have been the case. But it felt like every time an Ireland player, if it was Cullen or even Malumbi, even Alan Brown when he was shown, it often felt like when he was receiving the ball passing out, he had to control it, take a touch, then take another touch and then set it. Whereas sometimes when the Scottish lads were doing it, it was one touch, it was quick, it was sharp, do you know what I mean? And didn't give Ireland the time to really get settled. So, like, there was an awful lot of, like, the moments of class for the goals were positive, and it was great to see an Ireland midfield. I thought that midfield worked a lot better, and even with Knight dropping back in than the previous games. But in the back of my head, I'm still thinking Ireland could have been 1-0 down before they got to make it 1-0 themselves. And then if the game had went, they could have conceded a second goal, and then it's a completely different kind of game. And that's still a bit of a nagging thing in my head, thinking, well, there's still issues that should be sure you rectify it and are endowed by lads who realise on the pitch what's happening, not just what's being asked of them, but understanding and seeing the threat and the danger on the pitch. Like, what is Shane Duffy doing passing that second pass out when he sees Andy Robertson, who's one of the best, he's the best left back in the Premier League, but he's the most aggressive, intense pressing. He does that all the time. He can see him, I think, wasn't that on Brown? It was, like, what is
Adam
he
Brown, yeah
like, that's just like, that's still a worry. Like, I don't understand why he can see him and he's still playing that pass.
He had a right go at Alan Brown after it, and fair play to Alan Brown. Alan Brown fought his corner. He had a right go back at him. Oh yeah, big time.
Interesting.
Two of them really, really went at each other for a couple of seconds after it. Absolutely. I think it was Collins or somebody like that had to come in. Not that he had to separate them now by any means, but he just kind of pushed Brown as much as say, look, leave it, just go back to your position, kind of a thing. So he did. But
is it a personnel issue with Duffy? Like, is it, I mean, we're going to see now, because Duffy is suspended for the Ukraine game, so we'll see. I'd say Nathan Collins will slip into the centre of that defence. Is it a personnel issue with him? Like, I mean, will they, is he just not capable of doing that, or is there something deeper?
Look, I think two things on it. I think he is a good passer of a ball. I do. Like, as I say, he only misplaced two passes in the whole game the other night, okay? So I think he can use the ball. I think it's almost, maybe I'm wrong here, right? But sometimes I think when I'm looking at him that because he's conscious that people think he can't pass the ball and that he can't play, he actually tries to overdo it and tries to do it in situations where it's not on to do it. It's almost like, I'll show ye what I can do. I'm well able to pass out of the back line, if that makes sense.
I think that's it. I 100% think you're right. I think that's it. Like, there's no other reason for it. I think I absolutely nailed on the head.
That's interesting.
Do you know, like David was making the point there that our midfielders looked under pressure any time that they did receive it out from the back, as opposed to the Scottish players. But again, that's quite simply because in the manner we were trying to play out, our midfielders are receiving the ball facing their own goal. If you clip it forward to Jay Adams and he's setting it back to midfielders, now the Scottish midfielders are receiving the ball heading towards the Ireland goal. So it does make life so much easier. And it just needs to be a variety in the two, because I do think, like, I love how neat and tidy Josh Cullen is with the ball. You know, as a manager myself, sometimes there's players who you are happy enough for them to receive the ball in dangerous situations because you just trust them with your life. And to me, that is Josh Cullen. I, you know, in almost any situation, I'd be saying, go on, give it to him. He'll be fine. He'll spin off the right shoulder and he'll wriggle out there. So I'm not saying that we don't try and play out. We absolutely do. But just needs to be a bit more variety that the opposition need to know, well, do you know what? If we do go with a heavy press from the front here, you know, they've got two or three other ways of trying to exploit that situation as well. Just on in terms of the difference in terms of the final third, Gav, you know, and how much of a difference there was. Like, do you know,
are you gonna serve us some numbers here?
Yeah.
We've been me and David have been sitting here patiently waiting.
Yeah, of course. I am.
Of so course.
There
you go.
This should be called the number one corner or something. Number one.
I told you, we need to get Brano playing Scatman, Statsman. I wanted as my official intro music. People look at how many shots on target a team had in terms of, well, you know, how dangerous were they? It's not a great one to look at, because as you know, you can have a shot from bloody 30 yards that could be so tame, it's unbelievable, and rolls comfortably into the keeper's arms. The one that I look at to see how many, you know, proper chances had a team got in a game is attempts inside the 18-yard box, right? Because if it's an attempt from inside the 18-yard box, it's a fairly decent chance, right? Against Ukraine, we had 9 attempts from inside the 18-yard box, right? Now, granted, almost half of them were Shane Duffy getting his head on things, right? But we still had 9 attempts from inside the 18-yard box, 2 of which were on target, okay? Against Scotland, we had only 4. All 4 were on target, though. Like, that's a colossal difference. You know, that's a colossal difference. Just in terms of clinicalness, but it also shows that we didn't absolutely dominate and create loads of goal scoring chances.
I'm not feeling as good about this performance, I have to say.
No, it's good.
I mean, there's obviously lots of
it's one of them where, like, it's not as if it was one of them where Jesus Ireland had 85% of possession, kept the ball all game and won rings around. It was literally a case of a bit of luck by Scotland not being clinical, but then Ireland, which they haven't been for God knows how long, just literally being able to cut them open by a set piece. And I think even, like, we're talking about this, even say, but by playing out from the back, but say after the first, that first missed chance for John McGinn when Ireland played out and it was very poor. But what leading up to Ireland's first goal, the play, Ireland did build the play up quite well. We're playing it around the back a little bit. We're a bit patient. Got it out to McLean. McLean cut inside. Whips in a very dangerous ball from free play. And then goes over, takes the corner. And Ireland score from the corner. So, like, if you're kind of saying, well,
why are they keeping on trying to persist with playing that way in terms of seeing a bit of danger from the back and then getting caught? But then you have to take it, well, when they have that patience to actually move the ball to create a chance to get into a good crossing position, it's kind of like if you can't do one without the other, if that makes sense. Because otherwise, like, they could have easily, rather than being a bit more patient and rebuilding the play that led to the corner, they could have just been a hoof and it could have been cleared or something like that. So it's about, I suppose, just, I don't know, having that a bit of a kind of an element of consistency. But in terms of, it did feel as if though in the second half especially, that Ireland did control the game, but they just controlled it without the ball. And that partly was because obviously the goal came at a killer, like the tour goal just killed Scotland. Like Scotland, they just threw the towel in as well.
Gab, I'm just trying to play the typical manager's role of when things don't go great, you find the positives and you try and build the performance up a little. Mm. When things go particularly well, you try and dampen it down a little bit. So you're just trying to always keep it an even keel. I mean, I do think I fought hard here over the last two games to say that things were nowhere near as bad as some in the media were trying to make out. Absolutely nowhere. Every number bar the scoreline showed that Ireland should have got something from both of those games. And likewise, this time round, every number bar the scoreline shows that this probably should have been close to enough to have been a draw, really, in truth, all right? But let's go from saying that to, now let's really jump on the positives, okay? The change in shape worked in
the midfield. Yeah, sorry, I wanted to get into this, yeah. We also might now rename the podcast every number bar the scoreline. I quite like that. The midfield, tell us, Shane, what did he do with the midfield and why did he do it and why did it work?
Yeah, well, look, if David can take the credit for claiming that or for calling from Lumby to be in the side, I'm pretty sure I shouted from a while back.
I'm not taking the credit. Gav is the one blowing smoke with my ears there. Jesus.
No, I'm pretty sure that I called for a 5-3-2 from a while back. I thought we were crying out to just tweak it slightly to exactly what
in fairness,
what we got the other
and
day.
This is not I don't mean to be disrespectful to you.
Yeah.
This has been generally called upon. I know Brian Kerr had called it in Virgin Media. A couple of journalists had effectively called for it in their questions to Kenny at the press conference. So I mean it has been a general it has been out there and it was interesting to see him go for it.
Because it had a couple of really, really good things. Jeff Hendrick, we've spoken about Jeff Hendrick, okay, and he gets undue stick, and I actually thought he was reasonably decent in the two games, but his good work, lads, is almost always over the halfway line. I actually think our side of the halfway line, he clogs up Cullen's space. He gets in his way. He's counterproductive to him being there, so he is. So, like,
and is that like lack of defensive instincts? I just think his
qualities as an individual. But then what I'd say is that applies to almost all of the centre midfielders that we have, aside from Cullen. So I now think we've got a shape that allows an awful lot of players to be more comfortable. Like if Hendrick comes back into that team, I think he would much prefer playing as one of the 2 8s than one of the 2 6s. So I think it would suit him better. If an Alan Brown came back into the middle, he's more suited to playing as one of the 2 8s. I think you leave Cullen there as your 6, and then you go with 2 players either side of him, as we did the other day. Again, the 2 players don't necessarily have to be perfectly aligned in that. It was quite clear the other night that Jason Knight off the left-hand side of the midfield tree played a hell of a lot higher than Malumbi did off the right of the midfield tree. And again, that's a regular thing in football, that you will prescribe your 2 8s to do slightly different roles. What it led to us doing, Gav, was like we were really, really good down our left-hand side. And one, because a lot of the players on that side of the field played well. But two, just because we created massive overloads. Because if you think Obafemi played central, Tripart played off of Obafemi's left. Jason Knight went quite high on the left. And also, if you look at the average touch map, James McLean played higher on the left than Alan Brown did on the right. So you had James McLean, Jason Knight, Troy Parrott, and even Obafemi coming across from that side, all playing basically on that high left area. And I thought they were excellent. I thought they were really... I would have loved that Scott Hogan... By the way, it was Malumbi won the ball in the lead-up to the Scott Hogan one that was cleared off the line as well, just when we were touching on how well he played. But, yeah, it worked a dream. I also think up front, like, I thought... the balance in the front two was brilliant. And not only was the balance in those front two brilliant, but again, go through our personnel. For me, Callum Robinson is Troy Parrott in terms of their skill set. Very, very, very similar skill sets. I think they're completely interchangeable in terms of who does that
role. Are they? Parrott looks a lot more physically strong and a lot, well, at the moment anyway, a lot fitter, I have to say. I'd be a lot more confident seeing Parrott's name in the team sheet rather than Robinson, I have to say.
Yeah, and that's probably down to Robinson's lack of games over the second half of the season. Like, we can't have too much of a goldfish memory here. He was Ireland's best player in 2021 by a stretch, Gav. Robinson was Ireland's best player in 2021 by a stretch. I thought he was absolutely super for us.
I'd have Bazunu, but outfield player.
Sorry, outfield player. Fair enough. That's a fair shout.
Things are getting testy here. Sitting back.
Bit more this aggro.
I heard Callum Robinson was slagging your mark, Gav.
Oh, I always think we've reached a new low we can't surpass, and we manage it. Ogbene for Obafemi, again, seems like a straight enough sort of a change for when you're looking at who goes in that role. And then, obviously, you'd be hoping Adam Ida comes back at some stage, which of those roles. He's probably a little bit half and half in terms of those two roles. But I just think there's so many players in this squad that shape suits better. I really, really do.
Yeah, interesting. Where are we going now? Joe McCarthy asks, after the Serbia game, we lost to Luxembourg. After pushing Portugal hard, we drew with Azerbaijan. After that performance against Scotland, what is more important tomorrow against Ukraine? To get a result or simply to show some consistency in the team's performance?
My heart skipped a beat there when you said his name. I was trying to look down at my stats. I can't remember where he played. Joe McCarthy. Was he good? Yeah, look, a result would be absolutely brilliant. Cards on the table, I can't see it.
You think we'll lose again?
I do, yeah, I do. I look at the personnel that we're going to be missing and the fact that Ukraine are likely to be a hell of a lot stronger than they were the first time round against us, I would think. And then it's nominally a home game for them. I would be very surprised if we got anything out of the game tomorrow night.
Yeah, what do you think, Dave? No, but it's a good point that's made in terms of previously where, and it's been a thing for Ireland for forever. It's like any team, it's like any kind of mid to low ranking team, when they have a really good result performance, it's just naturally hard to back it up. It just is, just because the nature of having that consistency, it's the top level teams are the ones who are able to maintain that constantly. The fact that maybe there's going to be some enforced changes, so again, and especially in the defence, it's probably going to weaken. You would imagine it's going to weaken it. But then Darragh O'Shea, you'd imagine, will come in. Nathan Collins will still be in there.
It seems like Darragh Lenihan will come in. Kenny mentioned the fact that he hasn't played a game under Kenny. Hasn't played since the friendly against Northern Ireland. Yeah. The 0-0, which we've all memory hold from back in 2018.
He's gone to Middlesbrough, isn't he? He's signed up for Middlesbrough. He's left Blackburn. But again, he's another player who has had a good season. He's been playing regular football, so a bit of a break. You would like to think that even it's been a bit of a break in terms of probably about a month now, is it, since probably the last championship game? So I'm guessing he's lost maybe a bit of sharpness, but still someone who you, and if it's going to be a backs against the wall job, he's probably one of those type of defenders who you'd need, do you know what I mean? Rather than anything else in terms of just solid and dependable. But yeah, I think it is the challenge. That's why I just think no matter what, if they can get any kind of result by any means necessary, because it's just a case of building something in the squad and in the team where you get a really good result against a side at home and then can go in away game and back it up somehow. That, let's be honest, it will. Going there and just playing well would be great, but if they don't get a result, it's just going to dent that little bit of confidence. Whereas no matter what, if they can pick up a point, it just ends this kind of window on a bit of positivity. When before the Scotland game, there was an awful lot of justified kind of negativity and worry. Whereas it'd almost be a case of another, if you're constantly looking to see how an Ireland team can evolve and players coming through and all the rest of it, but if they can see they can go and just grind out a result, or even go there and play well and get a result, that could also work.
That could also help over there. Ireland team play as well. Like, we don't have to be shit and still get a draw. Like, I think playing well and getting the draw is perfectly acceptable. That's grand. And I'm sure that they will. That will be the aim. But it does kind of have that feel, because like Shane saying, like Ukraine have been able, well, they had to kind of mix things up, and I actually didn't see their team for their win over Armenia, but I'm guessing they would have made some changes there and maybe mix up again for the Ireland game. But like, I don't know. My head would just say I think Ukraine will just be too strong for Ireland and be able to get a result.
But that's why I'd argue, and we're all for arguing in this week's podcast, aren't we? So that's why I'd argue that.
No, we're fucking not.
That's why I think the performance is actually more important. Well, not that the performance is more important than the result this time. I just think the result is going to be the result, which I think is going to be an Ireland defeat. So I'm actually looking more so at the performance, because, you know, there's two different ways that we can lose this game. You know, we can be comprehensively second best and you know, come away with nothing but negatives from the game. Or we could come away from the game where we're saying, you know, we've lost that one, but you know what, Jesus, I didn't realise Daryl Lennon was as good as he is. And, you know, O'Shea didn't look out of his depth, and, you know, such and such did well, and that kind of thing. I think we can play very well for the players that we have on the field, still be beaten, but still come away with a lot of positives. That's what I'd be hoping from it, maybe.
Yeah. Abafemi and Ogbeni have travelled, though there is doubts as to whether they'll be fit to play. Assume that they are fit for a moment. Shane, what other changes are you making to the team? You probably seems to need freshness in midfield. Kenny mentioned the fact that Josh Cullen would be playing a fourth 90 minutes here. Is that possible? Jason Knight, I'm not sure like how much energy he has left, to be quite honest.
Yeah. I would imagine Horahan will come in Cullen's role, will he? Quite possibly.
It's the only kind of like for like, isn't it? It's the only one that has similar.
Yeah. I do. I would expect to see that. So I would say McLean will stay. I think the hard one to call is right wing back. What's he going to do? Will he go with Alan Brown there again, or will? I would think there's a chance that Alan Brown could come into one of the three in the middle of the field, possibly.
Is Coleman did Coleman travel? Because Coleman wasn't totally no, really. He no. didn't travel, did he not?
Right. No, Coleman has been. Yeah, Coleman is out. He's been ruled out of the window. And Egan and Duffy, I don't know if they travel, but they're definitely not playing.
See, I'd go with Brown just because he's a bit more. He feels as if he has a bit more experience than anybody else there. I know Christie's kind of been around the squad probably even longer, but if you're going to be making a few changes, I think Brown might work better there.
I would just wonder, does that leave us up light on options? So what three would you go in the middle? I would have had Brown in my team as well. I just think I would have him as one of the middle three. What middle three would you be going with?
I'd probably have Hourahan, Malumbi, and... Yeah, it's a good point.
I have Hourahan, Malumbi, and I have Christie at right wing back, so that Brown can play as one of the midfield three. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that probably actually makes a bit more sense.
Hendrick, not coming back.
Oh, sorry, Hendrick. Yeah, James. Or
would he? Would he start? Do you think he'd start? He started the first two, didn't he?
And came on as a sub.
Maybe that would allow Brown to play right wing back. Yeah.
But you'd keep the three in midfield that we saw against Scotland. You wouldn't go back to, say, Howran and Hendrick sitting alongside each other, which they've done before.
I would love to see this as our default going forward. I really, really would. I'd love to see us play this now for the next, you know, the next good few games that we go into. I do understand that, you know, you can make the argument that playing with a proper two up front may leave us a little bit open, but not really. Not if they drop off and kind of defend the centre circle for you, and that allows the other three to stay compact. So I think we can still be very, very hard to break down within that shape.
I'm trying to remember that, like, the Ukraine almost play like a 4-1-4-1 though, don't they? They kind of, like, it's that kind of leaves it a bit open then, I suppose, if Zinchenko plays and some of the, like, I don't know if maybe. Because you obviously have to not match up against them, but you also have to be wary of the threat that Ukraine would pose. And I think they have more players who can kind of do a bit more damage in that 10 position, don't they?
It'll be interesting to see how that, and that's why I think we have to go with that shape again, because we need to see, maybe, like I'm saying, let's go with that shape again. because maybe I will be proven wrong. But the only way for me to be proven wrong is to go with that shape again. Like, the only way we find out whether better teams carve us open in that shape is to try that shape against technically better teams. Yeah. So to me, it's a perfect opportunity to do it.
Yeah. Well, when he played a midfield three and, you know, 4-3-3, etc., at the very start, it was around, okay, mitigating circumstances sometimes in terms of player availability, etc. We carved open time and time again. I mean, that's probably one of the main reasons why they went to three at the back. It's just like opposition teams found it so easy to cut through Ireland in midfield. We'll go to predictions in a couple of minutes. We do have time for a couple more listener questions. Aidan Delaney asks, what's Kenny's long-term plan for left wing back / left back? McLean is 33. Stevens is inconsistent. No one else is really putting up their hands to be included. David.
Yeah, like, I was kind of looking at this thinking, I wonder if someone like a Ryan Manning who had been around, but then he kind of was left out of the squad for the match day squad for a couple of the games. And because I thought it was the Lithuania game, I actually thought he'd done relatively decent in that game in terms of getting up, and he has got a good delivery on him. And he's also versatile in the sense that even in around for a team, and the fact that if you are really, really stuck, you could have him as one of your three centre backs because he's played there for Swansea. And if you're really, really stuck, you can even advance him forward because that's where he would have originally started his career. Other than that, in terms of that position, like, yeah, it is a concern. I suppose like Doherty can drop over there, I suppose, but again, like, he's at an age where that's not really a long-term solution. Short answer is, for this campaign, it's pretty much, you have the lads who are pretty much set in stone there, but I don't know, in terms of even just trying to think of who's coming through, there's no one like Andy Lyons, but like, he's strikes me still a fair bit off that. He could work in that system, but for the level he's at the moment and the where he'd have to get to, like Liam Scales, if he had maybe that move maybe when he was going over to Celtic, but it seems as if he might have to leave Celtic to get regular football there as well. Kenny had spoken before that he was next man in, wasn't he? That was a phrase he used, but
falling down the ranks since.
Yeah. So there's no one really at the moment. I could be totally kind of missing an obvious name.
I don't think Garen, fairness, though. No, I don't think Garen. No. It is an issue. Definitely is an issue. Even the battle between the two lads is going to be interesting. I thought James was very, very good. Very, very good in that game. And I would have him ahead of Enda Stevens now in the pecking order for that jersey.
I'd agree. And also, McLean wants to get to that 100 cap. Like, he's on 93 now. He'll be on 94, you know, I'd imagine, after Tuesday. So, like, he'll be making sure that he's getting that 100 caps, and that'll be another, keep him around for a little while longer, you know.
Here's an interesting one for you, Shane, from Conor McManus. Interested in Shane's thoughts on Kelleher when on the ball and his decision-making. Watching the game, he seemed to play the ball into traffic rather than switching the play to the other side where we had a man open. It happened a couple of times during both matches. I don't know, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, again, look, obviously, we know the backstory about him playing outfield for so long. Again, he is one who is very, very confident with the ball at his feet, and he maybe at times takes a few chances that you'd be thinking, oh, not 100% sure that it's the right pass. Look, I would rather have a guy who's making the wrong decisions but has the required technical ability than a fella who the problem is that he doesn't have it in his feet, if that makes sense. I think Kelleher can be taught, well, you played this pass and this is what we wanted you to do, and next time round, can you try that one instead of that one? And I'm sure there will be a lot of that going on in terms of in the camp and having a look at the things that he's doing with the ball. Obviously, again, he's not playing a huge amount of football, so therefore he's not finding himself in those decision-making situations very often. He is doing a huge amount of training, so therefore his technical level is of a really, really high standard. And I just think his decision-making and making those right decisions just comes from getting more game time. So again, look, I think, Gav, to be honest with you, you could go down through that Ireland squad and the amount of players who we're looking at and saying, right, what's going to happen with them over the next 12 months in ensuring that they get as much game time as possible.
Yeah.
It applies to at least half the squad. It really, really does. And that's going to have a huge bearing on how well this Irish team does going forward as well. You'd love to see as many, obviously start with the two keepers and then work the whole way up from there. Even the elder fellas, like, you know, Duffy obviously wasn't a regular starter. Coleman going to be maybe under pressure. And you go right up through with the likes of your Hendricks and Robinsons, even Troy Barrett's, all these kind of fellas. You know, it would be fantastic to see as many of our kind of core squad of 16 to 18 that are regularly starting games for us, that at club level, they're getting lots and lots of minutes. But yeah, on Kelleher, I just think I would agree. I would agree with his point. I did think he got his decision making wrong on a few occasions, but I think that's not that it's easy to fix, but I think it is very fixable. Yeah.
But on a positive with Kelleher, and I think it's maybe something, I don't know if it's something that Bazunu lacks or just had need to do, but his sweeping up, like Alisson, really was very good. Like, there was a few occasions where he came out and cleared danger when Ireland had been, maybe not so much caught, but a ball coming over that could have been dangerous, but then also was just in good position. So, like, that was a positive, because as you say, he's not been playing regularly, so maybe sometimes he could have little deficiencies because of that lack of game time, but that he was pretty switched on for that. And also there was one moment in the second half where, and he doesn't strike it as a most imposing keeper, that's the truth, he really doesn't, I'll be honest. I don't, like, you know, like, compared to say, and maybe it's because of the nature of the position can change, but there was one moment in the second half where he came to a sea of bodies to claim a ball to just relieve a bit of pressure as well, and that just kind of adds a bit more confidence into a defence when you see their goalkeeper do that. So I thought overall he was still relatively competent, considering he is, like, he's the number, let's be honest, he is the number two goalkeeper. But like,
yeah,
so
for how much longer though, I'm wondering. He did press last week, and I don't know. The media phrase for it is he left the door open to leaving Liverpool,
well,
have to say.
Yeah, well, oh yeah, no, absolutely. Like, it does seem as if, like, well, the only way he'll be the Ireland number one is if he plays football. Like, the reason why Gavin Bazunio is the number one is because he took his chance when he did get it in an Ireland jersey, but then backed it up by playing regular football. Like, if Bazunio had have done what he did in an Ireland jersey at the start, but coming in after, well, the start of the last campaign, that would have been great. But if he was sitting on the bench at Man City, then you'd probably be looking at Mark Travers, because he would have been playing regular football in the Championship. The fact that Bazunu backed it up by playing regular football, that's the only way Cuevan Kelleher is going to get near Bazunu, is if he's playing regular football. And it looks like there could be movement on it in the next little while, that Bazunu will be the number one at Southampton very soon, playing Premier League football. That'll just put him further up the pecking order.
Yeah. Now, look, our predictions, listener, haven't been great lately. But I've got, you know, that Lemmy voice, like, double down, going through my head.
Yeah.
So we're going to double the number of predictions we're doing this week, because we're going to start with the Republic of Ireland under 21s away to Italy and Ascoli. Win means they qualify automatically for the Euros, draw or lose, and they're heading to the playoffs for the first time as well. So they're in bonus territory here. Can they do it, David?
Absolutely. I think they're going to win 2-1.
Ew. I like that.
I just thought, like, Italy have kind of, are beginning to, like, not that they were lucky against Ireland Talla, but like, it was a tight game, do you know what I mean? And Ireland have got serious, like, they're the one team in the group who have serious momentum in terms of even just their performances and not conceding goals as well. Like, that's been a massive thing. They haven't conceded a goal in the last many games.
Oh, they let one in, didn't they, against Montenegro?
Montenegro,
that was
3-1. Oh, sorry. 3-1,
yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Oh, well then. Sorry, so I'll be 2-1 then.
Sorry. Shane, what do you think?
Oh, I'd love to be as bullish. Nah, I think we'll be looking at the playoff route. I think we could suffer. I think it could be 2-1 the other way around, possibly.
Okay. And Republic of Ireland against Ukraine in Łódź in Poland. Shane?
I'll go 2-1 again, Ukraine.
Okay. David?
I think 2-1 as well. I think Ukraine will win, but yeah, I'm being positive. I think by saying I think Ireland will score.
Yeah.
I think Ukraine will be too strong, and the nature of it as well, coming at the last game and after one, the people who are missing, I think it could be a bit of a stretch for the squad, to be honest, to get it. So
Yeah, well, what a day in football. What a day of football awaits. 4:30 kickoff of the 21s, followed by Ireland against against Ukraine at 7:45. We're going to be back on Wednesday morning with another bonus podcast to review it all. Until then, thanks to David, thanks to Shane, thanks to you for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday.